start right on.
There I am. Well, I think this might mark a bit of a change in gears. For one thing, I'm going to be focusing on more on the behavior of the targets of evaluation, the candidates themselves, although really still in the service of understanding how their behavior affects voters' opinions of and behavior toward them. So we're still in that same ballpark. I think a bigger shift is going to be that I'm not really going to present any original data. The one empirical study I've done in this area, I'll briefly describe because it's relevant, but it's not earth-shattering. So I'll bring that up. But I have reviewed this research on candidate emotionality and on affect in politics fairly comprehensively, and even I'll describe to you a theoretical integrative model that Peter Salovey and I proposed a while back that I think still actually has some value to it in this context. So what I want to talk about first is just, and John actually already did kind of a nice job of this, to talk about some of the research more generally on the role of affect or emotion and mood and evaluation in electoral politics and how that influences voters' decisions and behaviors. But I want to shift pretty quickly from that to talk more specifically about my particular topic, which is candidate emotion itself. And I'll talk about specific research that's been done to date. There's not a lot of it, but there's some very compelling work. And then I'll relate some of that to the general theory, Ekman and Friesen's work on display rules, and Matsumoto's refinement of that, that bears well on this topic. And then I will resort to some heavy-handed anecdotal evidence, mostly in the form of pictures like this, recognizing full well that it's just that and it's only suggestive. But I think when you're trying to predict presidential election outcomes, you have a small n in terms of the number of outcomes, sometimes these powerful historical examples can be telling in one way or another, but I wouldn't blame you for being highly skeptical of any suggestions that I make. Then I'll move from there to suggest some key emotions that candidates may or may not express or may express in different ways that could be particularly influential in voters' judgments of them. And then I'll be so presumptuous as to even suggest a few possible new items that could be included in the survey. And the first one I'll suggest, and then I'll debunk it very quickly, hopefully in the service of providing a good criterion for what would be good measures to include. Before that, that's the future items. Before that, I actually kind of cheated and went to the ANES website. Maybe that's not cheating. Maybe you want that. And then created some very, very descriptive graphs of unpartial proportions of voter preferences and the like. But just to give you a sense of what's already available through this universally available database. And all I got was the descriptives off the website, but they're you can get the raw data fairly easily. And if I had started the process more than a few days ago, I might have actually gone and done that. And a few of the studies I'm going to describe are also based on NES data from the days when it was just the NES. Okay, so there's already been reference to the Abelson, Kinder, Peterson, Fisk work. But with regard to the role of voter affect, these guys, I think using NES data, I know for sure that Granberg and Brown did, but I think both of these studies used NES data to demonstrate that voters' affective reactions to candidates were, in their estimation, more influential than their more cognitive assessments. Granberg and Brown qualified that to say that the influence of affect was less stable and less predictive of voting in the absence of relevant cognition, so specific information about candidates. So I guess one could conclude that the combination of affect and cognition could be particularly predictive of voter decisions and behaviors. Campaigns implicitly know this. I don't think they've read these articles, but the Goldwater campaign said in 1964, in your heart, you know he's right. So they were appealing to this affective reaction and trying to legitimize it. And similarly, the 2004 Bush campaign in some markets use this tagline, alone in the voting booth, why take the risk? So sort of implicitly saying, whatever your rational decision-making process is telling you, when you're alone in the voting booth, let your gut take over, as Stephen Colbert would say. I read it in my gut. Okay, so I looked it up in my gut. That was the expression. Okay, so there are a number of ways that affect can affect voter decision making, and they're not inherently irrational. So there is long sort of this long held assumption that this is a bad thing. People should be making highly rational decisions, and emotion and cognition, and never the twain shall meet. But there's some compelling argumentation that affect can serve, for example, in George Marcus's conceptualization, affect can serve, as in particular anxiety, can serve to motivate people to vote to change circumstances. And then in Schwartz and Clore's theory, affect can serve as information. So to the extent that we, and this is kind of like online processing, to the extent that we have formed a summary evaluation in affective form based on the accumulation of maybe more cognitive information, we can draw on that, our affective orientation towards something, without having to go back in a memory-based fashion to recreate our attitude. And specifically then moving, the affect as information thesis is a more general theory, but specifically in the realm of political decision-making, Victor Ottati and his colleagues, Bob Weyer and Linda Isbell, have shown that that happens in political decision-making as well, although in those studies, it seems a little more irrational because the affect is induced experimentally and isn't specifically tied substantively to the candidates that are being judged. So it's more like a priming effect. And this is related to the idea that, that really more the affect as information idea is related to what Popkin called low information rationality, which is that political judgments can be made with relatively minimal information. That might be, those judgments might in fact be very similar to the ones that would be made with more information or more systematic analysis. And some of this low information rationality might be, and a large part of it I think is based on party identification, which has some systematicity to it. People who identify with particular parties do tend to hold similar party policy positions. But Rosenberg and colleagues have shown that even just showing people photographs of candidates can influence their judgments, which I would not want to put in the necessarily in the rationality column. And similarly, Sullivan and Masters have shown that very short video clips of candidates can also influence people's judgments. And in both of those cases, it might have as much or more to do with attractiveness and charisma than to do with policy positions. Of course, when people make judgments of candidates, especially in this more sort of heuristic fashion, those judgments are only going to be made through the lens of the media, in particular the news media, that they're presented to them through. And Kinder, Peters, and Krosnick, and I've never noticed before that you've got this sort of interesting symmetry with the Kinder and Peters in the middle and then two people on the outside. And so there's the Abelson, Fisk, Iyengar, Krosnick thing. So, sorry, I'm obsessing over the authors. But anyway, these guys show that generally the media obviously moderates how people make judgments to the extent that it doles out the information and it tints the information and the like. But again, more specifically in the realm of emotion and politics, Shields and McDowell showed that partisan media representatives presented this, they described the emotions of particular candidates in this particular study, Geraldine Ferraro and George Herbert Walker Bush in the vice presidential debates, I guess that was 1984, that Republican and Democratic news people described the emotions of those candidates in very different ways, particularly in ways that were more favorable to their candidate, the candidate of their own party. And Mullen et al., because it's many authors, study that some of you might be familiar with showed that the extent to which the affect displayed by news anchors like Peter Jennings and Dan Rather and Mike Wallace, Mike Wallace, affected the affect they displayed differentially when talking about different presidential candidates was related to, and then there's a question about causality, but it was certainly related to the positivity of the attitudes of their typical viewer. So there's a maybe more subtle, you know, this is the newscaster emotionality affecting voter judgments of candidates. Also, now getting down to the actual issue of affect or emotion of candidates, and there's a nice, consistent, but small corpus of research here. McHugo and Lanzetta and Sullivan Masters and their colleagues in this and other studies have shown that that voters' physiological responses to candidates can be different from the more deliberate self-reports that they give, and they show this using electromyographic measurements of subtle affective responses to Ronald Reagan versus Walter Mondale, for example, showing that even Mondale supporters exhibit emotional reactions consistent with Reagan's emotional expressions in a way that they don't with Mondale, which shouldn't be all that surprising, Reagan having been an actor, even if he wasn't one of the best. And then you have work by another study by Victor Ottotti with Turkelson and Hubbard, which shows that low motivation voters are actually more likely to make their judgments in a heuristic fashion when they're viewing a candidate who's expressing more positive or happy, specifically happy emotion. And this is going to come back to my recommendations later on with regard to the happiness of a candidate's expressivity influencing and possibly being something worthy of measurement. Sullivan and Masters also, with regard to happiness, show that happy and reassuring candidates, I've got to be careful here, this is a different, I'm using this word differently now, their candidate displays affect, not affect, more attitude change than even party identification, at least in their study, or issue agreement or leadership assessment. So things that you would really expect to be highly influential in voters' judgments of candidates are scoring below just simple, happy, and reassuring kind of presentation of a candidate. Laura Tiedens has shown, even using clips of a real politician, Bill Clinton, and then replicating with a fictitious or unknown politician, that anger displays when the politician talks about a specific topic in an angry way. In Clinton's case, I think it was actually with regard to the Lewinsky scandal, that actually increases or yields a relatively high status rating relative to when the candidate talks about the same issue in a more sad fashion. And so we could possibly infer that that angry displays are in some ways, under some circumstances, advantageous in terms of promoting the electoral fortunes of a particular candidate. This is the one empirical study that I participated in, this, which is with Laura Stroud and Peter Salove. And what we primarily found there was, the big effect was that when we showed people a fictitious candidate reading a speech in either an emotional or a relatively unemotional tone with varied emotion, a range of different emotions versus not quite flat affect, but more of a monotonic kind of expression. And we varied the label that we gave him as either being a Republican, a Democrat, or we didn't label him at all. The party match of the subjects and the candidate label, the candidate's party label, was the most influential factor in terms of their judgments of him on a number of different dimensions, like their liking for him, their judgment of his competence, and their indication that they would be inclined to vote for him. But in the absence of a party label, when he was not labeled as a Republican or a Democrat, the more emotional candidate was preferred to the less emotional candidate, indicating that in the absence of a strong heuristic cue like party identification, emotionality itself or emotional expressiveness might confer some preferability to a candidate. This is not quite on candidate emotion, but Roseman, Abelson, and Ewing showed that with messages, so pamphlets that they gave out to people, when they varied the emotional tone of the message and they measured the emotional predisposition toward that topic of the respondents, that they typically found emotional resonance such that people were more convinced or they were more persuaded when there was emotional resonance in the case of anger and pity. But they found this cross resonance where If the person was fearful, they responded better or were better persuaded by a hopeful message. And this, too, I think is highly relevant to presidential campaigns, although it's only been shown to date with these text-based messages and not with an actual candidate talking. Fear appeals alone, without a hopeful, without any kind of hope included in that, generally elicit very negative responses. Okay, now moving on to more of a theoretical framework, Ekman and Friesen's ideas about display rules and how the manner in which we are expected to express emotions can vary as a function of culture and context, but there are a lot of universe, just like there are universal perceptions of emotions, there are quite a lot of universalities in terms of when and where it's appropriate to display certain types of emotions, ought to be useful in terms of thinking about candidate emotionality. I would think that generally, and again, here's where the anecdotal evidence might be useful, generally politicians are going to be relatively constrained in the range of emotion or the intensity of emotion that they can express. So that would be one sort of overarching dimension of a display rule. And this is possibly going to be a liability for candidates who really have to work at that because, as Arlie Hochschild has argued, people who are in a position of chronically managing their emotions, like flight attendants and, you know, people who are working in the service industry, they actually bear a burden and show psychological consequences of that in terms of stress and related problems. Anecdotally, it's pretty compelling that extreme displays of emotion are politically devastating, and this is maybe the sort of archetypal example. This is Edmund Muskie. In 1968, he was the far and away leading contender for the Democratic nomination for the presidential race. And in March of that year, he at least appeared to, it's still controversial as to what he was really doing, but it looked like he was sobbing at a stump speech in response to some questions about accusations about his wife. So, you know, arguably under any other circumstances, it would have been a reasonable emotional reaction, even to display that. But for a politician, the way the history is written, it says that that was devastating for him and that he quickly fell in the polls. And a few months later, McGovern had pretty much, Humphrey, the 68 Humphrey had pretty much wrapped up the nomination. Is that right, Humphrey? 68, yeah. So that's one, you know, powerful anecdotal example. It's hard to disentangle, you know, the true history from the lore around it. But it's at the very least a message that goes out to candidates that pretty much don't cry in public unless, you know, unless the circumstances are really quite extreme. How could I not include Howard Dean? So I probably don't need to say yeehaw, but I will. And here's probably a case where Dean's emotional expressivity is not necessarily the primary cause of his downfall. He was already starting to fall in the primaries at the time that this happened, and this was maybe an overcompensatory emotional expression. But, you know, a lot of people believe that his campaign just completely fell apart after this, and I would argue that that was at least in part mediated by the media interpretation of it, particularly the blogosphere, which proceeded to present this event. This is not real. He never strangled a kitten. And for that matter, his head never exploded. But this was easy to find. I mean, when I did the search, the Google image search for Howard Dean, these came up in, you know, among the first few pages. So these are influential. On the other end of emotional expressivity extremes is Michael Dukakis, who was widely criticized for not expressing enough emotion when a bizarre question was asked of him during a debate with Bush. It was not this exact picture, but that's the only picture I could find of them debating, having to do with a hypothetical rape of his wife, I think. And he was very intellectual about it and expressed very little emotion. And I can't really imagine what the appropriate emotional reaction to a question like that would be. But whatever it was not satisfying to viewers in general, and I don't know that we can attribute his loss to that, but it didn't help. This one's really going to come back to haunt McCain, but I'm pretty sure he was joking around in his picture, so I just threw it in there for fun. Okay. So getting back to the general idea of display rules, David Matsumoto has conducted a study that I think is particularly relevant. This was intended primarily to be a cross-cultural study where he was comparing Japanese and U.S. Students. And he had them rate the appropriateness of different emotional displays under different circumstances, varying in part the status of the displayer and the displayee, high-low status interactions, and the like. And one of the things that he found that I think is most relevant is that the emotional displays were rated as more appropriate in general by low status. So an emotionally expressive display was more tolerated or was more accepted when it was exhibited by a low status individual toward a high status individual than the other way around. These are actually really quite large effects, in fact, and it was true for mostly negative affect like anger, disgust, fear, sadness, and then surprise, which is kind of an ambiguous valence-wise. And there was no difference between them for happiness. So again, happiness sort of comes up. At the very least, this is saying that expressions of happiness by candidates aren't going to hurt them, candidates being inherently high-status people. Aspiring to be high-status people, but typically already so. Okay, so this leads me to wonder if there are some, and now I'm going to have some more gratuitous pictures, but this leads me to wonder if there are some emotions when displayed by candidates for high office that are particularly advantageous. And I think I've already suggested this, that happiness is probably, and it's probably not a coincidence that the term happy warrior is what's used to describe candidates. But I think expressions of happiness, this is one of the more subtle ones on Clinton's part, but if you look at most pictures of Clinton, he almost always has some kind of positive affect on his face, and except when he's wagging his finger. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger is just, he is the ultimate happy warrior. He's just almost always got a smile on his face. And I don't think it's a coincidence, by the way, that the state of California, the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world, has twice elected actors who had virtually no governmental experience prior to being elected governor. And I'm not saying that to be critical or cynical or anything, but I think it's telling. And both Reagan and Schwarzenegger are sort of known for their positive affect and their happiness. Although I'm going to bring up Reagan in another way. It's possible that anger in the right situation, especially to the extent that it confers, according to Laura Tiedemann's work, that it confers higher status, could be advantageous. We see a picture of Nixon looking kind of angry, and we immediately start saying, well, that must be a counterexample. But, Watergate aside, Nixon was a very successful politician. Bush seems to effectively use, I'm just speculating here because I've done no systematic analysis on these things, but just to kind of jog some thought on this subject, and I'm not implying that Hillary Clinton is a particularly consistently angry person or anything, but it was a good picture of her displaying something looking a little angry. I think Reagan is more known for his hopefulness, and I think that he's the prototypical example of somebody who was really effective in the Roseman, Abelson, and Ewing way of integrating fear messages with hopeful appeals. And in fact, really contrasted with Carter in that way, who was really promoting more of a fear, unfortunately at the time, appeal without the hope, or at least it wasn't coming across. It's hard to think of Jimmy Carter as not a hopeful person, but it wasn't coming across in the way that it did with Reagan. But again, this is highly anecdotal. I'm being a little bit suggestive here. It does seem empirically that, expressing sad emotions is not an effective thing for candidates to do, except, of course, under the most obvious circumstances where sadness would be the only appropriate emotion. Again, at least relative to anger, Laura Tiedemann's work suggests that sadness is inferior. And I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that John Kerry actually chronically has kind of a sad look on his face. And I have to wonder, and again, I would never try to draw an inference about, I won't even need it. I would never try to draw an inference about the binomial outcome of an election based on the shape of somebody's eyebrows. But I think it's food for thought. But at the very least, I think that extreme expressions of emotion are disadvantageous for politicians. But that doesn't really put us anywhere very, very valuable. I think that's conventional wisdom. Here's the model that Peter Salovey and I generated a while back to try to comprehensively explain the various routes that the expressed affect of a candidate could lead to differential voting behavior. And so we have, these are the ones that the literature seem to suggest that the affect itself could cause greater persuasion because people might be paying better attention when there's this extra stimulus. They might have better memory for something that's expressed effectively. Credibility could go kind of either way. If it's extreme affect, it's probably going to undermine credibility. And then you have the idea of emotional resonance leading to differential message persuasion. Or it could affect candidate liking or inferred ideology based on the inferred personality of the person. If they express certain kinds of emotions, they may be more caring or cold or strong or weak. And then to the extent that emotion is expressed consistently with display rules, that ought to be favorable to candidates who might be judged as more or less suitable for public office. Okay, let me just take a minute to run through some of the existing Ains items on affect. So there's the overall feelings of negative and positive feelings toward candidates that's been on the website. They only started with 52, but maybe it started in 48. Been rated. There's also a feeling thermometer, but it tracks really closely to this, so I'm just showing this. One of the things that just pops out, and I'm not going to try to interpret this data because these are completely unpartial data, but it kind of jumps out that the variability or the volatility of these judgments seems to have decreased over time. And I don't know if that's just an artifact of specific historical incidents or not. But there are questions on whether or not the candidate has made the voter, so this is not candidate emotionality, but voter affect. Has it made the voter feel angry? Has the candidate, so I've got Democrat and Republican data here, made the voter feel afraid, feel hopeful, feel proud? And then these are sort of quasi-emotional, but not really quite getting there, attributes of the leader that are rated by the respondents. So does the would you agree that this candidate expresses the attributes of a strong leader? Is moral? Here's one trend that's fairly obvious. This is trend. Knowledgeable. Another fairly obvious trend. And then I'm not trying to be facetious. I don't know if you guys know why there's, I guess they dropped this question in after 96, but inspiring. And this, unfortunately, this might be the most affect-like question, that to the extent that somebody is, you know, it would be hard to be inspiring without being in some ways expressive, but not, it doesn't tell us much about differentiated specific emotions. Okay, so I'll just wrap up by saying, here's a possible question. How often does the candidate seem to be, and then these various emotions, but I'd be concerned that this would be a waste of a question because you could probably achieve this correlating everything else you've got from the existing website, but you could get this rating by having a smaller sample who rate the candidate on these emotions and then just make a reasonable assumption that that's those overall nomothetic ratings are gonna relate to the Ains sample, or you could even have experts fax code them across a broad sampling of behaviors. So I would kind of throw that one out. I put it up and I throw it out. But maybe it'd be useful to ask them something more specific that will get more at the idea of display rules and whether or not candidates are adhering to political emotional display rules. Something along the lines of, do you think whichever candidate expresses the appropriate emotions at the appropriate times, and then asking them always, most of the time, and I'm not sure how you would structure the rest of the question. And then finally, and the answer is yes. So I'll leave it at that.